Holmes talks with Harold Jaffe, author of 22 volumes of fiction, novels, docufiction, and essays, including the recent Induced Coma, 50 and 100-word stories, and Anti-Twitter, 150 50-word stories. And at 11:30 on the film show, in advance of the Northwest Film Center's Essential Gus Van Sant retrospective, Jen Chavez talks with Mario Falsetto, the author of the new book, Conversations with Gus Van Sant. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you aren't a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
Time for KBOO News from the Boo with
Mike
and
Monica Beamer.
Hello, once again, it is 5:45 on a Wednesday, which means it is time for News from the Boo. All the information that you need to know about what's going on here at the station and in the greater KBOO community area. We're going to be talking in just a few minutes about House Bill 2002, a very important piece of legislation going through the Oregon legislature right now to end profiling in Oregon. But first, we're going to take just a minute or two to mention something that's going on here at the station that you can have a direct impact on. If you are a longtime listener or a volunteer here at the station, you will know that we have a programming charter. But what you may not know is that we do not and never have had a mission statement. Now is the time to craft one. If you are interested in joining the efforts, we've got a website for you to go to. It's a little cumbersome, so pick those pens back up and write this down. The full address is www.kboo.fm/help-tell-the-world-what-KBOO is all about, which is short for, short-ish for Help Tell the World What KBOO is All About in 50 words or less. If you don't want to type all that into your browser, you can just go to your search engine and put in Help Tell the World What KBOO is All About, and it's going to bring you up a PDF document from the station that will give you some background on why we're doing this, what we're looking for, the timeline of events that are going to transpire, and more or less what you need to know to get involved in this really, really interesting and important project. All right, so now that I've talked enough about that, hello, everyone.
Thank you so much for taking that on. I mean, thank you, Brian. It's important that we do this, and because KBOO has 45,000 listeners and 5,000 members, and we represent the community, we want to get you all's input. So in April and May, we're going to be getting input from members, and in June, the board and staff will take that input to a retreat, and we will craft a mission and a vision statement. And that's going to be at the board and staff retreat in June. June and July, we're going to send a proposal for mission and vision statements back out to members for comments. And by August and September, we're going to review members' comments and feedback and consider possible friendly amendments and make the final decision together on a mission and vision statement for KBOO.
So a really unique opportunity to get involved in directing where you want your radio station to go well into the future.
Indeed.
So the first step is there is a survey that started up a few days ago, and it'll be going on until May 15th. Mm-hmm. If you want to participate in the survey, as of right now, you do have to put in that full web address, because that'll take you to the subpage on KBOO's website that has the link to that survey.
That's right. And Brian, what is that again?
That, again, is www.kboo.fm/help-tell-the-world-what-KBOO is all about in 50 W-O. Oh my gosh, let's do that one more time. KABU.fm/help tell the world what KABU is all about in 50W0.
Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, well, Mike, you have two guests, one in the studio and one should be on the line. Do you want to introduce them?
Sure. We've got Salome Chimuku in the studio from the Center for Intercultural Organizing, and she's here to talk about HB 2002 to End Profiling. And on the phone, we've got Ricardo, and who's also supporting this important work. So how's it going, Salome?
Hello. Can you guys hear me?
I can hear you, Ricardo. Thanks for calling in. So
yeah, definitely. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, I wanted to have you guys down because I think that this bill is important to a lot of people in the KABU community in the Portland area. And tell us a little bit about the work you're doing and why this bill is important to you.
Yeah, definitely. Again, I'm affiliated with Oregon Action down in Southern Oregon. I'm part of the Rogue Valley Board. I'm a Rogue Valley Board member. And okay. one of the biggest issues that we're facing right now is racial profiling. Oregon Action as an organization, we want to come off not as anti-police, but actually pro-police. We view things differently than other organizations might. We actually encourage many individuals to kind of look into what a police officer has to go through on a day-to-day basis, and also we understand the difficulties that they might stumble upon, but at the same time, we also have to hold the ones that are not doing what they're supposed to accountable for their actions. So all of the three current bills that are being proposed are a huge, huge campaign in our organization.
Okay, so thank you so much for that. So you're down there. What community did you say you were in?
I live in Ashland, Oregon, but okay. The whole Rogue Valley. We represent the whole Rogue Valley.
Okay, excellent. Because this bill is going to affect people statewide, actually, not just in the Portland
exactly.
area. So, Solomon, exactly. can you tell me more about the bill, please?
Yeah, of course. So the bill has, this is its second round in the Oregon legislature. The bill came as not an entirely new concept. There's about 42 states that have a definition of what profiling is and prohibiting it. Oregon is one of the 8 states that does not. Also, there is about, 33 different states that have a process and how to deal with profiling on a statewide level. Oregon, back in 93, passed some legislation in regards to racial profiling, saying that each municipality needs to create a system of dealing with racial profiling by their law enforcement agents. But what we failed to do back in 93 was create a system that handled it at a statewide perspective. So now fast forward to 2015, we now have each municipality has their own definitions on what profiling is, some more robust than others, and each has their own way of dealing with profiling. Such here in Portland, we have the Internal Police Review Board. In other places, it's simply just, you know, filing a complaint with the supervising officer. It really just varies from not only within a city, but what level of law enforcement you're talking about. When you're talking about police officers, you're talking about sheriffs, it's a whole nother process. When you're talking about troopers, it's a whole nother process. So we brought this legislation about by looking at what other states had in terms of definitions, but also how they have a system in place to deal with it at a more statewide systemic level, to really not only identify where we're having problem areas, but where we're having places of improvement and try to mimic that elsewhere. So the bill does state that it's not only profiling based off race, but it's also profiling based off national origin, housing status, profiling based off gender identity, and faith, and so on and so forth. Because what we find is that, you know, profiling, although when folks think about profiling, the first thing that comes to mind is race, because that is the most apparent thing that we can conceptualize, there's profiling based off various reasons. And Portland in particular, we see a lot of profiling of folks experiencing homelessness. Mm-hmm. And so we want to change the perspective in which we have and allow folks to reclaim their identity and not be categorized as dangerous, but more so that just different and not dangerous.
Can I ask you, if this passes, how would your organization go about measuring the progress or the success of this being implemented?
Yeah, and so I think for the most part, with any new legislation, especially one that creates something that hasn't existed before, it's going to be a big push for us as community organizations. We're a part of we sit at a table, a coalition in which we had, but has about 37 different organizations across Oregon. And so it's going to be up to us, as well as other organizations that have joined on and endorsed, to really get the word out there to folks that there's now going to be a separate place besides the municipality in which you can file a complaint. And we're going to be measuring that success based off not only our community members' perspective in terms of trying to use the system, but also based off agencies' willingness to accept those complaints for what they are. Because a lot of municipalities, one of the conversations have been like, well, you know, we only get 5 complaints in a year, most of them which we find unsubstantiated. But as you know, when you talk to members of the community, when you ask them, like, you know, how are you profiled? They say yes. It's like, well, do you file a complaint? And they say no, because in most of the cases, they have to go into the same municipality, potentially bump into that person that profiled them in the first place, or B, they have no faith that someone that close to that individual will be really unbiased when trying to see if a profiling incident did occur.
I have a kind of a follow-up question on that. I was reading through some of the amendments that were being made to the bill, and in one section, law enforcement agencies was being removed from the section that described where profiling is defined. And it seemed to me that that really puts the focus on individual officers. And I was wondering if that would make the job of overseeing profiling more difficult because it wouldn't be tracked at a full department level.
So the departments, like I said earlier, will still have their own systems in place, and they are still going to be doing on the individual level, handling those complaints as they come in and doing it through their internal process. And the LECC, which is the Law Enforcement Data Policy Review Committee, is going, yeah, it's ran out of PSU, are going to be taking these complaints in as well. And the municipalities must forward the complaints that they receive, as well as getting ones from the members of the public. And what happens there is that the focus of the definition is based on individuals toward individual, because that's where that profiling does occur a lot of the time. But there is later on in the legislation, something that is really important is that there's going to be a task force banded together to identify what we call patterns of practice. So they're going to be looking at, well, what do we do when you have someone who is not just profiling once or twice, but on a continual routine basis? And that's going to be like really where that focus of enforcement is going to happen, because on an individual level, you know, everyone has biases that we may or may not perceive to be a bias. And on occasion, like, even the best officer might engage in profiling once in a blue moon. And it's not necessarily something that is intentional, nor is results in any harm, but more so just like occasionally we all mess up in our own profession. And so, but with the purpose of bringing this task force along is to see what happens when we have someone who is routinely doing this. And also what also happens when we have an agency that has an issue where it's not just one officer in this agency, but we have multiple officers in one department. And how do we remedy those situations there?
So you really may be able to see some patterns that aren't obvious right now.
Correct. Or in case of a prime example would be, we could also see if we have some inherently biased policies that target whole communities, such as we used to have ice holds of sheriffs that sheriffs would do, and that was found to be just inherently biased towards folks of mostly Latino and Latina communities. And so that is one of the things that we're trying to look at, is like, okay, is there maybe something wrong with the marching orders they're receiving and not necessarily the work that they're doing, but...
So we only have a little bit of time left, and I wanted to talk to Ricardo too, because he called in. Ricardo, I'm pretty biased. I happen to think that there is a lot of systemic racism and white supremacy in police departments nationally, mm-hmm. and locally as well. What are some of the things that you face as far as profiling that are specific to the Rogue River Valley community that we might not see so much here in Portland?
Well, I think the number one thing is that there's no research and there's no surveys really out there showing the amount of complaints that many people would want to file. Kind of adding on to the point that was previously brought up with the complaint system, many people don't know the process, don't know that they have to go and talk to a specific agency or whatever in order to file a complaint. You know, this pretty much all started with an 18-year-old Latino that was only armed with a knife here in Medford in 2012 that was shot. Oregon Health and Science University actually conducted a survey to see the relationship between the Latino community and the police department, and it wasn't rated pretty well. I mean, in the survey it said it wasn't very well, but it wasn't really bad either. In my point of view, if it's not well, period, it's not a good system. So it's something that definitely needs to be addressed. I work as an immigration paralegal as well at a nonprofit here in Medford, Oregon, and a lot of the clients that we get are actual victims of domestic violence. When we talk to them in regards to getting some kind of immigration benefit, we ask them why they didn't present their case to a local agency, and they're simply scared. They're simply scared about how local agency, law enforcement agencies kind of react towards them coming forward, just basically because they're either Hispanic or they're not white. And I'd say about 60% of the clients that come in through our office, that's the kind of response we get. The relationship is not strong within the community and the law enforcement, and that's something that we're kind of hoping to build. There's just not that urgency, I guess, within the local law enforcement agencies here in Southern Oregon and the Rogue Valley to make that connection. It hasn't been until recently that we've actually had contact with our newly appointed sheriff, Corey Falls. We've actually had a couple meetings with him to be able to touch base regarding this issue and try to move forward and build that connection with the community and the sheriff's department. In regards to the Medford Police Department, we're still having those conversations with them as well, and we're trying to get as many representatives from every law agency, local agency, to participate with our organization as well.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, unfortunately, we're just about out of time. Thank you so much for calling in, Ricardo.